Selections Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Ryan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ryan. Hi.
For those of us who care, join us. Let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are discussing step 12. Please welcome our panel. We have Jim and Dave. All right. So, step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. I'll read the first passage on page 96, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. So, page 96. Suppose now you are making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he is prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program on recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else.
Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, you got it.
All right, I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Dave.
And
good time.
Yeah, I wanted you to lead off. Anyway. Yeah, I hear sometimes that sponsorship isn't mentioned in the big book, but we got a whole chapter on it, I think. This chapter that we're reading tonight, working with others. And, you know, I'm just real fortunate that I've had people in my life, you know, that have helped me through this. And, you know, and I love working with new people. It keeps me in the book. It keeps me centered. It keeps me remembering. However, like it says here, if they want to go with somebody else, I just want them to get help. I want them to get better, you know. And I've had guys that I've worked with for a while and have changed, and I've changed myself a couple of times because I believe sometimes we can outgrow each other, or maybe I want what somebody else has, you know. But so that doesn't bother me a bit if somebody decides they want to get some other help. I think the most important thing I have to give, and I was talking to Jim about this earlier, is just my love and my ears, you know, the listening. It talks about it here, you know, if he wants to tell his story. I'm not sure I have a lot of practical advice. I've got some practical experience that I will share. And occasionally I might say, if this was me, I might do this. That's about as far as I will go with it. But I'm just grateful to be here. I'm a member of the New Day group. I forgot that. And I love this group. And I love the format here. Thanks for letting me talk.
Go ahead, Jim.
I'm Jim Willis. My home group's principal's group. We meet on Tuesday night, closed discussion, literature-driven, out in Chesapeake. Starts 7 o'clock. You know, we were talking a little bit there before we got started here, and you know, I got thinking back of whenever we were talking about 12-step calls. Now, when I come in, I can remember my first sponsor taking me on a 12-step call. So I asked him, I figured I had all of about 3 months of sobriety, and I figured I was ready. And so I asked him, I said, Eddie, I said, what do you want me to say? He said, absolutely nothing. I said, well, I got experience, strength, and hope. He says, you haven't done anything yet. He says, no, you don't need to talk. Well, we got into that 12-step call as a husband and wife team. He looked at me, I said, you told me not to talk. I ain't talking. I mean, it just short of a fist fight right there in their living room. Both of them all liquored up. She's going to throw him out. And I mean, it was just, I mean, it was terrible. I've almost run just to get out of there. You know, it's but I was afraid my sponsor tell the other guys he was sponsoring, I run on him. So, but you know, the thing about that was, is I remember those times when you'd go on a 12-step call and you'd get some guy. So he'd immediately, after you got him out of, you know, dry dock or whatever, and you go to meet with him, and still shaking, and you sit there and trying to read the book with it was a challenge. I mean, I think back about when I got sober, it was about the same thing. And so, you know, it wasn't a matter of taking ownership of the old boy, but I was telling Dave, too, I said, the first guy I ever sponsored, I had a year of sobriety when this guy asked me. His name was Mark, and he's no longer in the area. And he says, so I was his sponsor. We went through the book, and I thought, man, I've put the golden stamp on this guy. So at 2 years my sobriety, 1 year is his, he turns around one day, he says, Jim, I think I'm going to have to get a different sponsor. I said, what? He said, I'm going to have to get another sponsor. He says, you're good as far as you've gone, but he says, I need someone that's got some more experience. So I was gracious about letting the guy go. I about chewed his ankles off before he got away. You know, couldn't he understand all I'd given to him? I mean, and here he's abandoned me after all that work I've done. Well, bottom line, I laugh about that stuff today, but you know, it's one of those kind of things. We drunks, men or women, when we first get here, we end up, if we get a sponsor, sooner or later, we're going to log into someone who's going to carry the message if we're going to be here. And it doesn't mean if we do exactly. I got a bunch of guys I sponsor, and I can tell you for certain, not a one of them hired me on as their sponsor to give them minute directions in every area of their life. They wouldn't listen to it anyway. But what we do share in common, we're drunks. We can share our experience about what we did for us. And for every guy I sponsor and the guys he sponsored, we follow this book. My first sponsor said, man, if you read the black parts, just read them. He said, don't get off in the white stuff. You're not bright enough for the white parts in that book. He said, just go on and take care of the black ones. And he said, one last thing, and I pass this to guys, new guys especially, stay in the black parts of that book. Follow directions. Just keep coming back and don't pick up a drink. And I, too, am very grateful for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous and be a part of this. And if somebody helped me at the very beginning, and it wasn't someone I necessarily wanted to help. He looked like a fire plug, but he was the right guy for me. Thanks.
Thanks.
All right. Now, on page 98. It's not a matter of giving that as a question, but when and how to give. That often makes a difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on the service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts in God and clean house.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
And I came to AA through a treatment center. In fact, Jim and I were talking beforehand, and I've been sober 14 years, and I've probably been on 6 12-step calls, and they were all people I already knew. You know, today, we don't get a lot of new alcoholics over the phone. I still love doing the phone watch, and I encourage everybody to do that because it's great service work, and you often do get to help some people that, you know, that are looking for it. But I came through a treatment center, and I've met a lot of guys through my work in treatment and other people through corrections, wherever it may be. But when I was there, when I got there anyway, I heard them talking about changing people, places, and things, you know. And all this, you know, I can't get sober without a job or a place to live and all that. Well, I didn't have a job or a place to live or a girlfriend or any of that. And so when we would talk about changing people, places, and things, they told me to get some. and they were right. I had nothing. I ran it to the end, you know. And that's when I got fired, that's what happened. I got fired by the last guy on earth who would hire me. And I was stealing from him. And he fires me, and as he's walking out, he turns around and says, "Do you want to go to treatment now?" And I just knew at that point that I had nobody left to con or manipulate or couch surf or any of that. In fact, I slept in the woods that night. It was my first night sober. But I said yes, you know. And it was one of the first spiritual experiences that I recognized. I know now, looking back through my life, there were many others. But because when I said yes, it was like an out-of-body experience. I wanted to grab it and stuff it back in my mouth, you know. But I'm so grateful I did that. And I say all that because, you know, I was a taker. And it talks in here about giving and how much to give. And I've struggled with that some. And, you know, I've learned to set a few rules for myself, I guess you call them. I like giving people rides. I like eating with people, you know, things like that. I'll do that for anybody. But I know that, yeah, I would have told you when I got here, oh, I don't want to ask for help, right? I asked for help my whole drinking career. I want you to pay my bills and buy me a drink and do all those things. You know, it was just I wanted to dictate the help that I got, you know. But I learned in here that to take the help that's offered, and thank God for that. And, you know, and the last thing I'll just say, this whole business, you know, of you can get sober no matter what the circumstances are. I believe that because, I had those circumstances. And I believe, and what has happened in my life, is that when I place sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous first in my life, everything else falls into place. You know, I did the steps. I still work the steps. And that helps for everything. That clears out space for God to come in and line up all that other stuff, I believe. Thanks.
Thank you. Yeah. No, you can go ahead. All right. Well, I'll wait.
Did you guys switch up order?
No, I'll be first.
You know, it gets this. I thought about, you know, when I first got help myself, and I was chief in the Navy, and I got my fourth DUI, I used to collect them like Christmas tree ornaments, you know. I mean, every state I hit, they seemed to know I rolled in there. And the first night in Virginia, they locked me up. And I for sure that South Carolina had called ahead and told them I'd left out where I'd hit every jail down there. But on top of that, we landed up here, and my bride or my wife and two kids were at the Navy Lodge out in on the Little Creek base. And I told my bride, so I'm going to go down here and buy a six-pack of beer. I'll come right back. And she says, please don't do that. I said, no, I'll be right back. Well, the next time she had to come the next morning and bail me out of jail. And she doesn't drive. So she had to take a taxi in a strange town with both of our children. And what I remember about that whole experience is they brought me out of that back cell and brought me out in the courtroom. And I remember looking up, and I saw my wife. They had this like gallery where you like, you know, somebody gonna throw stuff at you or something. I'm glad they had the plate glass window because she'd have probably thrown something. And I've seen that look on her face many times before, one of disgust. Here we go again. But But I'd never had my two children in the courtroom when I'd been in the courtroom. And they were both crying. They didn't understand why I was shackled up and all this other stuff. I say that to remember where I came from at the end of that drinking, where it was all, it was just bitter. And so voluntary went to the Navy's treatment program. So I'm sitting in there, and about 2 weeks in, they wanted your spouse to come. I said, no, she doesn't need to be here. And they said, well, good. Then you don't, in other words, 14 days, you don't get any time out. Well, finally, I signed a release. I let her come. Well, I never will forget, there were three women. It was my wife, the counselor they'd assigned me, and a family counselor. And they had me, it felt like a broom closet. And I was cornered. And I remember that family counselor looked at my wife and says, don't you have any confidence this man can change? She says, no, and if you people are smart, you won't either. She says, did he tell you about this latest DUI? And I hadn't told nobody about that. Boy, I jumped up out of my chair and almost started crying. I said, I told you not to bring that woman in here. She's messing up my program. Well, I couldn't spell program. I was forced to come clean. And one of the things I found when I come out of there is that, getting back to what it says here, I was clamoring for everything. I wanted a car. I owed everybody. I had an American Express card, and they used to have a commercial back then, don't leave home without it. They were telling me not only leave home without it, but mail it back when you do go out. You know, it's done. And so I only know how to, when I meet with a new guy, I have to start with where I started from and then where I had to work out, like any one of us do. And so when I got a guy, he's saying, well, I got, you know, my wife won't do this or she won't do that. It reminds me again of where I came from. And I says, look, man, whether your wife changes anything she's going, I just met with a guy yesterday morning. And that seemed to be the theme. And I told him, I says, man, I says, it's not about her. It's about you. I says, there's absolutely nothing you can do to change her. I said, look at the damage you've created. That's what you got to look at. I said, that's on us. My sponsor often says, and I think this really speaks to it, he says, this is a nasty illness. He says, we do more collateral damage to people who did absolutely nothing but care about us and love us. So when I get a guy that's really whining real loud, I tell him something my first sponsor told me. He said, man, why don't you free yourself? He's whining, ain't nothing but anger coming out of a little bitty hole. He says, that's all it is. He says, you're going to start working those steps. He says, I'm not going to work with you. I don't always tell guys that. I don't, you know. I mean, it's, but what I do tell them is, if you want to try this thing, you're going to have to do it, whether you get your wife back, whether or not you get, you know, your job back. Any of this other stuff is really immaterial, because you'll keep losing it. And you'll keep losing. When we get this job, you don't stay sober, it'll be right back at business as usual. And at some point, you know, some guys just decide, well, they don't want to do it. I don't chase them anymore. You know, I says, look, I'm here. I ain't going nowhere. I said, I paid my dues to get in this room and to get a place at the table. I said, it's also my responsibility to stay in here. And we've all taken some hard knocks, just like it says. There's not a person in here that's an alcoholic that doesn't know what it feels like to have alcoholism run right up your back and destroy everything around you. I think until that happens, there's not much you can do unless a man or a woman surrenders to the fact, I'm done. Then and only then do any of us can start operating from some spiritual principles by getting into those steps. It's the way it was for me. It's all I know how to do, and it's a product. I've been sober a number of 24 hours. But I can tell you, I still do the deal today, the mechanics of this fellowship, even on that, if the day doesn't feel good, even if I don't feel like I'm in some kind of spiritual cloud somewhere, I still suit up, I show up, and that's what I try to pass on to another person. And the last thing I'll say here is that this whole thing about job or no job, wife or no wife, after I was back with my family, about 6 months in, my wife says, can't you stay home one night with us? You know, I was going to meetings every night of the week, and I mean, I was involved. I had a sponsor. I was making coffee, home group. I said, what? No, I can't. I says, you wanted me to get sober. I'm getting sober. I need to. So I went and told my sponsor. I said, you know what she's telling me now? He's what, Jim? So I told him. He says, well, why don't you stay home? He says, all the woman and your kids want is some of your time. So I was force-fed to do that. And then what happened was, is he said, what are you doing tonight at your home? I said, I'm usually so tired from the mother six night, I go to sleep on the couch. He says, you are just thick. He says, get off the couch, stay home two nights a week. So after that, I began to get the message. But that's all, that was the only way I was ever going to be able to build trust with that family, was for me to show up. And nothing worse coming in from an AA meeting and have your wife sniffing you. And she says she's not sniffing you. I mean, I said, quit sniffing me like I'm a dog. I'm not sniffing you. I said, I know a sniff when I hear it. I said, you're sniffing me. Well, and I told my sponsor on her. He said, I don't blame her. He said, if I was married to you, I'd sniff your hind end too, and you wouldn't be in the big bed either. I said, and I just knew the two of them were colluding against me. But the bottom line is, until somebody really gets to the point that they're willing to do this work, it's to no avail. And I think any of us sitting in here know how that feels, that ending of it, finally being teachable. That's the way it was for me, and it's the only thing I can pass on. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
All right, now continuing on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such preparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, you should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault-finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis on which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
Never been married, never had kids, constitutionally incapable of forming a true partnership with another human being. It's gotten better, but I can tell you, when I was drinking, I mean, I had a couple of long relationships, but I was so emotionally bound up that, you know, I was not a full participant by any means. But I will talk about the family I grew up with and the effects of my alcoholism on them. And that is that I basically somewhat transferred my denial to them. And the way I did that was, I lived in Virginia Beach. They were in Charlottesville, New York, and I just kept them there, you know. And they loved me, and I loved them. But as time went on, I grew further apart. I pulled myself away because I didn't want them to see me the way I was, and because I was selfish and self-centered. And when I was supposed to be there, I got drunk instead. Like the book talks about, at the worst possible time is when I like to get drunk. You know, I meant to be there at Christmas. I was looking forward to it. But when the money hit my pocket to go, I drank instead. And so they had to know at some level what was going on, because the lies I told were getting so outrageous that they had to know. They did. But anyway, they gathered around me when I started getting sober. But there was a long period of reconstruction ahead. And I, after about a year, I made amends to each of them individually. My brothers, two brothers, my sister, and then I had eight nieces and nephews. And those were the ones that I probably hurt the most, because we had been very close. Because, of course, I'm emotionally much closer in age to my nieces and nephews than my brothers and sisters. You know, so I can relate to them, and we have been tight. And then I kind of disappeared, you know. And they would ask at Christmas or Thanksgiving, where's Uncle Dave, you know. And so after about a year of returning phone calls, showing up when I said I was going to show up, sending cards, being an active participant in the family, I went and made amends. And they told me almost to a person, you know, I can see you've changed. The words don't really matter. It's the actions, you know. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has told me. It doesn't matter how I feel. I got to do the action, you know. I have to show up, and I have to be a part of. And, of course, what happens is after I do that, no matter how much I didn't want to, I'm so glad that I did, you know. And I want to do it again right away, right, you know. So, you know, today my brothers, they don't talk. There's something there. Something happened. One of my brothers ended up in another fellowship. And he didn't speak to the whole family, including me, for 8 years for various reasons. But I knew that if he worked a program and God would take care of that. And he and I are close again. He doesn't speak to anybody else, and I can't fix that. But I keep my relationship with him, and I keep my relationship with everybody else one-to-one. And when it overlaps, that's great. But I couldn't have done that without God and you people. Thanks.
Thank you. I sit here and I thinking back how it was. I could, part of the reason for me anyway, running to the meetings the way I was doing is it gave me a safety valve. I didn't have, because it got to the point where the wife and I needed to talk about things. She wouldn't bring it up, neither would I. And it was just cold. And so it was easier to run to an AA meeting than it was to sit in that house and feel that cold, or better yet, the fear that maybe she would ask me something. Because I had walked away from my family for 7 months. The last 7 months of my drinking, I'd abandoned my wife and two children. And believe me, that's not a grandstand. That's just where my alcoholism had taken me. I had the best intentions to be a good husband, to be a good father, but all you do is watch my actions. That's not what that said at all. And so when I'm working with a new guy or something, and this whole thing working with others isn't limited just to another drunk. It says we have to practice these spiritual principles in our own home. And I remember talking about my two children with my sponsor, and he says, man, he said, don't promise these kids that you're going to buy them this and you're going to buy them that when you can barely pay the rent. He says, all they want is their dad around. That's all those kids want. And in my case, that's exactly what it was. My daughter and son, they just wanted me around. And they didn't want to have to live in the same fear that their mother had, that when I went to the ship, was I coming home that night or 3 days later? It would always be the promise. So it wasn't a reach for me to begin to take a look at these spiritual principles and know that I had a lot of work to do, a lot of work to do, particularly when I did that fourth and the fifth. And I looked at those steps, and I thoroughly took a house cleaning. I had to start, and guys that I sponsor, I talk about, I said, man, if you're not willing to leap into this thing with four and five, I said, I don't know how I can help you. If you're not willing to do the heavy lifting to clean up the wreckage of your past, I said, I'm not a miracle worker. Because, and again, it goes back to what we're talking, is that when I look at this, the only thing I can pass on is what my own experience, what the book has told me. But I can tell you this. It says, this whole thing, it says he should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument, fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. Once I began to get into the steps, I genuinely wanted to be a spiritual man. I didn't know what that looked like, but you people had convinced me something was different. Something was different about the men and the women I was running across in these meetings in a home group. That I was one of those drunks, and I've heard many drunks behind the podium say this. I was a guy that never felt comfortable in his own skin. So just putting a plug in the jug, that's the mechanics of it. Sure, I can't pick up the first drink, but believe me, my sponsor often says, he said, man, a woman or a man that finally surrenders that they're an alcoholic on step one, they don't have much time to sit there and dwell on that. They got to move right on in to that whole thing about hope and come to believe that a power greater than themselves could restore us to sanity. It's because if you don't do there, you can't jump into some hope. It's not going to be long. You're going to find an option. It's probably going to be a drink again or just walk away, whatever that situation is. And that was so true. And the way I found hope, I realized today it was from the traditions. It wasn't necessarily when I first started this thing with the steps. I didn't know much about the steps. I mean, I could read, but I didn't, you know, I hadn't done anything. But that whole thing of looking out in an audience and seeing people that were different, hear their stories, men and women, and I thought, is this possible? Even my wife, and she wasn't an alcoholic, but she heard this guy talked one night, and she heard a story. And she told me this years later. She says, "You remember that guy, Clay?" I says, "Yeah." She says, "When I heard his story for the first time, it was so much like yours." She says, "I sat there. I hadn't been sober very long." And she says, "I sat there and wondered, oh, my Lord, could Jim do that?" And then she says, "I shook my head and said, that's not going to happen." And the way I'd been, that was a pretty legitimate response. And so, but what happened was, it had to be more than just my intentions. My actions had to change within that family. Not just when the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember very well going to a group one night. It was on a Tuesday night. And it was really miserable. There were a lot of things going on in our family, and I was just miserable. I wasn't drinking, but I wasn't practicing too many spiritual principles. I went to the door to walk and turn the doorknob to walk into that meeting, and I remember in the moment I became aware, as tired and as frustrated as I was, when I touched that doorknob to go in, I put this fake smile on, Mr. AA. And I really became aware of that. I says, what just happened here? Because what I was doing was trying to dress up the outside like I'd always done, and I hadn't cleaned up the mess on the inside. And so that's really what that was about. I talked to my sponsor. He says, man, it's time to move again. We need to move further with these steps. So I had to be spoon-fed some of this stuff. And it says, in many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. As those results kept happening, as the years began to move on, I heard this conversation. Well, first of all, after I've been sober 12 years, I remember my wife telling me, she says, Jimmy's really angry and he's bringing up a lot of stuff from when you were gone. And he was only 6-7 years old when I was gone that 7 months, and his sister was older. But I remember this real clear. She says, he's asking a lot of questions of why you left us. I've been sober 12 years by then, and I'm thinking, now? And so that night I come home from work and sitting, and he was sitting over there, and every time we had TV on, and I saw him glaring at me. I looked at him, I said, Jimmy, is something wrong? And finally he got the courage to say it. He said, why did you leave us? By this time, Jimmy's about 18 years old. He's a good-sized boy. He's not a boy. I mean, he's a big man. But I remember very clearly, and he was teared up, and he wasn't one to cry. And I mean, I think most of it was anger. He would just... And I looked at him, I said, son, I says, you, your mother, or your sister did absolutely nothing wrong. Nothing. As my drinking had taken over my life, and I had no other options but to drink. I said, I couldn't bring you all into that. I says, I didn't want to be in it myself, but I did. And I kept drinking. And that began the healing. And a friend of mine told me, he says, Jim, it's finally safe enough in your house for that boy to ask the questions he needs to ask. He says, in a family, we all don't heal at the same pace. You know, a drunk gets sober, man, life is good. Isn't it grand? The wind quit blowing. But meanwhile, I don't want to look at any of this devastation I've left behind. Spiritual principles have led me in that. And the last thing I'll say on this, two women that knew me better than anybody on the face of this earth was my bride and my mom. And many years later, I remember my mom visited my wife. I heard her telling my mom out in the kitchen. She says, Mom, she says, Jim's a good man. He's a good husband. He's a good father. He's a good grandfather. And my mom says, he's finally the man I knew he could be. And it wasn't because of me running my mouth. I'd made the effort, and I had people like you helping me as a sponsor, and then tried to practice it. Not to perfection, but I tried to practice it under the aid of a sponsor, a home group, staying in service and keeping active. And I don't know any other way to do it, and that's all I can pass on. But sometimes working with others is the best thing. That'll get us out of ourselves when you can't do anything else. Sorry, went on long.
Not at all.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move over to page 100. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances.
Dave, I'm now caught.
Dave.
sponsorship and both sides of that equation have given me the most growth of anything in my life. I stole my first sponsor like I did everything else. There was a guy on the phone at the treatment center talking to somebody. I said, "Who are you talking to?" And he said, "My sponsor." And I just grabbed the phone and said, "Hey, will you be my sponsor?" And the guy said, "Sure." I didn't know who he was, you know. But he helped me so much, you know, and he gave me a solid foundation. He said, "Call me every night at 10. I said, "Isn't that a little excessive?" And I hadn't even had a phone for 5 years. Thank God they had phones in there. But every night he would say, "Have you drank today?" I said, "I'm locked up. You know, how could I drink?" But he drilled it into my mind that was the most important thing, was not to take the first drink. And we read the book together, and we did a lot of things. And you know, he would tell me, you know, "This is probably helping me more than you." And I would hear that, and I said, "Oh, that's a bunch of you know what. You know, you're just selling me a bill of goods." But I found that it's true. You know, like Jim said, I mean, nothing takes me out of myself and self-centered contemplation than, you know, another alcoholic. Second to that is service. Next to going through the steps, service has afforded me the most growth in my life. It's hanging with you people, you know. It's being in district meetings or assemblies where there are hundreds of alcoholics gathered together to help each other. And really, you know, for me, service is just about making 12-step work possible. You know, it's providing all the tools so that when we do meet that new guy, and also to get us to meet that new guy, because like I said earlier, referrals are kind of our number one way to meet new people now. But that's what service does, is it allows me to have the tools along with my experience to help that new person when they come in. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. Yeah, I wanted you to go first, because it's easier if you go second. You can pick up. Thank you. Appreciate it, brother.
You're welcome.
You said that, I hadn't thought about this in a long time. I remember my first sponsor, Eddie, who told me, he says, "I want you to call me every night at 6 o'clock. Like I said, I was a bit arrogant and bullheaded, and I was chief in the Navy, and I says, "What?" He said, "I want you to call me every night at 6. I says, "Why?" I says, "I'm not going to do that." He said, "Well, good, don't do it then." Well, now he piqued my interest. You know, I says, "Well, why do you?" He says, "Well," he says, "this was," he's the only thing, he says, "I don't care if you don't do any more than pick up the phone, you call me." I had a phone.
Oh.
Yeah, it was just barely paying the bill, but I had one. But anyway, he says, "I don't care if you don't say anything more than your name and say, Eddie, I'm okay, and I'm going to go to a meeting or whatever, and I'll talk to you later. If that's all you get out, that's okay." He said, "But you'll get so used to calling me that if you think about picking up a drink again, you won't hesitate. You'll be so accustomed to calling me and talking with me." And in 6 months being sober, I came very, very close to picking up again. Very close. And it wasn't because of anything major that went wrong in my life. It was a Saturday. I was out washing my truck. And every time over the years that I washed my vehicles, I always was drinking. Well, that day, there was no thought of a beer or anything. I'm washing this truck, and all of a sudden, the thought come in, cold beer sure would taste good. And this time, I didn't follow directions, as opposed to trying to think of something. I let it hang around for a while. And the longer it hung around in my head, by the time I finished washing that truck and walked in the house, the expression on my face was different. And the wife picked up. She says, "Are you okay?" She says, "What's wrong?" And I hadn't said anything yet. The same old attitude had come back as, "I want a drink." And she said, "Oh God, Jim, please, not again." And the same old nasty attitude, "Leave me alone." And she says, "Please call your sponsor." It's Saturday. I said, "He's not going home." So I'm already putting things in place. And she said, "Well, go out to Easy Dozen Club. Maybe you'll be out there." I said, "He's not going to be at the Easy Dozen Club at 1 o'clock in the afternoon." I said, "You know, so I mean." So finally I told her, "I'm going out there, but that's it. If he ain't there, he's not there." and driving out there, the desire to have that drink. And I went by a couple honky tonks I used to go by. I didn't go in them, but I saw the vehicles. And so I knew who owned them. I knew, you know, like Bill Wilson talking about that chatter coming out, you know, having a few drinks. And all of it was taking on its own life. And when I got the Easy Dozen Club, come around the back and I walked in, there's Eddie. He was never out there during that time. I told him, and I mean, I just sat there, I was froze. And when I told him that, we sat there and talked for a good hour and a half or so, and it left. So just because, you know, and it wasn't anything bad going on. But the other piece to all of that is that, but also realize that when I'm working with a new guy in particular, I'm going to say, look, man, call me. I don't care when. If you think about picking up, I'm going to try and talk you out of it, but I can't stop you from doing it if you decide to pick up a drink. But there's a lot of things you can do not to have to pick up that drink. And I love this paragraph because in our home group, we close with this paragraph. Every time we close up the principal's group, this is the last thing we read before we all stand and pray. And again, it says, if you persist, remarkable things will happen. When you tell a new person, just stay in here. Your life's going to change in ways that you'll never expect. I'm a good example of that. The life I've had as a direct result of this, but when I first got here, that made no sense. It was easy to see some of you out there were doing well, but I thought, I've done so much damage, I'll never get there. How will I ever clean up the wreckage of my past? And you all begin to provide me with a solution. And this was the other thing. So when we look back, we realize the thing, we come put ourselves in God's hands, we're better than anything we could have planned. One example. As a military guy, and I was an engineman, so primarily worked on equipment, heavy equipment stuff. Got sober, 2.5 years sober, and all of a sudden I was having some real problems getting up and down the ladders on the ship. And I was only in my late 30s, so they sent me off, and long story short, they said, we're going to have to replace your hip. It was totally destroyed. It was just, and I'm thinking, this is real good. I'm 2.5 years sober. All I ever knew how to do, and I thought when I retired, I'd go to the shipyard, that was out. I said, how am I going to make a living for this wife and two kids? And I was angry. I said, God, how can you do this? Why can, you know, not just to me, but my wife and two kids, how am I going to make a living? And they pulled me off my ship and put me on a TAD assignment, making a decision if they'd even let me get my 20 in. I had about 17 and a half years in, and it looked like it was all going down the tubes. And my sponsor had the gall to say, well, God don't close one door, he don't open another. I said, I hear that one more time, I'll knock him in the head. You know? He was single. He didn't have a wife and two kids, and I told him some of that stuff, too. And but it's strange. 6 months later, I get a call from one of the COs, and he says, Chief, I understand you're going through some tough times. And I said, yeah, but we'll get through it. And he says, and they offered me training to retrain me in a whole different field. And sent me, he says, will you take those orders? I says, that's full duty. I can't take those orders. I'm on limited duty. He says, I knew what your status was before I called you. He says, will you accept the orders? I said, yes, I'll accept those orders. Next thing I know, they sent me to San Diego and retrained me to do something totally foreign that I'd never done before. Never. And it changed our whole life and our career about what I could do and what I couldn't do. So right on time, these things happen. Just when it gets the darkest, I think I've heard a lot of drunks say that, when it gets the darkest, it's when we finally surrender enough to reach out to the God of our understanding and say, I need some help. And most of us, even after we've been here for a while, still struggle with that whole concept. I got to do it on my own. That's bull. The sooner we can get to that surrender, no matter how long we've been sober, the sooner we're going to be able to move through that and to be able to have that experience to pass on to another person that comes across our pathway. I firmly believe in that. And it says we'll presently live in a new and wonderful world no matter what your present circumstances. I'm a product of that. I absolutely believe it. And I'm nothing special. I'm just a plain old run-of-the-mill common drunk. Period. But I was given a way of life here by you folks. You're gonna have to throw me out of here. I'm not going easy because of what's happened here. It's an amazing fellowship.
right, continuing on page 100. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have told us we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory that he would escape the alcohol problem.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. I remember the first time I had to go where there would be drinking. It was a wake. One of my best friend's mothers had died. My mother died young, and she was kind of one of the mothers by proxy in my life. All my friends' mothers kind of mothered me for a while. So I needed to be there. But I knew there'd be drinking. And I was still pretty fresh. And he explained the things to me to do. You know, take money for a phone call because I didn't have a cell phone. Take my own transportation. Go with somebody that doesn't drink. Keep a soda or water in my hand so that people aren't asking me, do you want to drink? Do you want to drink? And leave if I got squirrely, you know, and pray. And so all of that came into good use. And I was at this wake, and I think death is the strangest emotion to me. I've never really handled it well, and I'm not sure if it can be handled well. But I was talking to a guy, and he was holding a beer, and it actually talked to me. I heard it. It said, I can calm that feeling in your stomach. I said, whoa. And so I said, excuse me. And I went outside, and it was up in the mountains outside Charlottesville. It was a beautiful day. And I prayed, and I said, God, if you'll help me get through this. And I walked back in, and I said goodbye to my friend, and I left. You know, because that's what I needed to do. I needed to be there, and I was there long enough, and I left. And I still live by those principles. I mean, I go to a lot of places where alcohol is served, but I do those same things. Most places I go these days, I'm with alcohol, you know, sober alcoholics, which is good. But I'm not a big fan of whoopee parties. I've been to a few, but I don't get much vicarious pleasure because it reminds me of me too much, you know. And that's what I like to do. I pick the drunkest guy there out and say, that's me. And say, I don't want to be like that, you know. And I come early and I leave early. You know, I go to a lot of live music. I go, you know, I fish more and golf more and travel more than I ever did. But, you know, I'm doing most of that with sober people, you know, and that's a great joy. You know. That's it. Thanks.
Yeah, it's. I was given those same guidebooks you were given. Mm-hmm. I remember about we were invited over by some old friends that a husband and a wife that we'd been stationed with before. But he was the only guy that came to see me when I was at that Naval Alcohol Rehab Center. He was an E8 and I was an E7. He came to see me, and he drank, but he was not an alcoholic. So all the other chiefs I run with were drunks like I was, and they weren't about to darken that door. They're afraid a big neck come down over them or something. But the bottom line is, we went to that, and I got my sponsor, and I said, man, what should I do? I says, they're good people. I says, they, you know, and he says, on the day it is, he says, first of all, make sure that you're spiritually sound where you need to be. And he says, same thing. He says, put your truck somewhere where you can get out. Don't pull in where you get blocked. Park it on a street or something so if you need to go. And he said, then take it as an educational thing. I said, what do you mean? He said, just kind of watch and see how many of you walk by your face during the course of that get-together. So I thought, oh, this ought to be fun. So me and the wife and the kids, and they had kids there. It was a family get-together. Well, I never will forget, there was a woman that was sitting over, and she wouldn't say anything to any of the other Navy wives. She was very timid and wouldn't say anything. And then they had a guy that was doing the cooking, and somebody said, man, tell that joke you was telling. Oh, no, I'm not telling. No. And so it went on, and it wasn't long. The woman who was, about 2 hours later, the woman that wasn't talking about it, she's over just crying. The other Navy wives are trying to console her. Nobody knows what she's crying about. I mean, she's just boo-hooing. And then this guy that wouldn't tell a joke, you can't shut him up. I mean, yeah, and it's rapid fire. You know, we're having to move the kids to get away from him. And then there's some other guy that's trying to put a run on another guy's wife, and a fight breaks out. I mean, and I thought, oh my God, this is like a bad video. Somebody threw back up at my face here, you know. But I thought, but it was the same thing. I thought, but for the grace of God. And after a while, we went ahead and left. But it was one of those kind of situations. And the other part was, is that, you know, whenever we're, if we're spiritually fit, That's always the product. I do a lot of traveling today, and I do some consulting work, and then I actually retired about 6 years ago, but I still keep active by doing some other things. And most of the people that I associate with on these things, professional people that drink. They have wine with their dinner. I still don't understand it, but they know what wines to, you know, between different kinds of fish. I said, just go on and order. Gee, that's what's going on in my head. Just get it over with. And then they'll, you know, and they'll sit there and snip it and sniff it and move it around. And I thought, this is crazy. You know, but they don't get drunk. So, but I also realize that on those kind of things, I make humor. Most of them now know that I've been in the fellowship for many years. So, you know, and it's no big deal. I'm around. But I remember there was one, I realized I wasn't with my own kind. Folks like in this room. We were all sitting around this big fancy place. We were up in Connecticut, you know, one of the big high-end fancy bars. I keep thinking, they're going to find out this country boy from Kansas. What am I doing in here? But they had this thing, and they... So one of the women asked me, she says, Jim, you were in the Navy, right? I says, yeah. She says, well, is there anything memorable? Did you ever come into Rhode Island or anything? I says, yeah. I was on an old destroyer. We pulled into Rhode Island. She says, was anything memorable about it? I said, absolutely. She said, what was it? I said, first place I ever got hit in the head with a beer bottle. And see, I normal response. Drunks understand that language. She, oh my God. And the women, oh, did you, was it bad? Did you get stitches? The guy says, oh man, what happened? You know, and it dawned on me, you're not with your own kind, man. Just shut it down. Just shut. I mean, like you said before, David, drinking career, who else does that? Only drunks call it a drinking career. I mean, you look at that deal and think, what? Well, I mean, it was serious business. You had to get practiced in it. I mean, if you were going to be a professional with it, we all had to, you know, make that deal until it got too much to handle. But, you know, looking back, all I can say again is, and just to repeat myself, that it's never about you. I don't have to drink, but I can so be so spiritually ungrounded that I'm a miserable to me. And when I'm miserable to me, I'm just afraid of what's that going to be to everybody else that I come in contact with. I don't have a right to make somebody else's life miserable because I've showed up. I did that for a lot of years. I don't do that today. And so that's what this stuff deals is that it works. You can't argue what works.
All right, I'm going to read the last two passages. First one is on page 102. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go ahead and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you are drinking, you are withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Don't start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. And finally, on page 103, After all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. And I told you earlier I got fired from my job, and I was thinking about the way I used to act there, and I don't know why this really relates to what we just read, but I was so resentful because they weren't treating me right, and they weren't paying me what I deserved, and I was lucky if I showed up 3 days a week and never on time. And I remember one day I was barefoot, probably hadn't showered in a couple of days, and somebody asked me to do my job, to do something. And I went off on them. And it was just so inappropriate. And I wasn't drunk. You know, the things I did when I wasn't drunk, that was the insanity. And it was the things that I did to keep drinking, or that I had to drink over, or to further my drinking, that was the real insanity for me. So my problems were of my own making. It was all in my mind and the way I thought and the way my mind would work to justify the things I did. And I'm so grateful for AA because, like Jim said, you know, once the plug was in the jug, that's when the work started. I mean, that wasn't easy, don't get me wrong. Not drinking was difficult, and I needed all the help I could get from you guys to not do that. And luckily, I was locked up for a long time not doing that. But at the same time, I was being taught these principles that Jim talked about, the spiritual principles that my mother tried to teach me, but I didn't like her methods, you know. And I wasn't desperate enough at that time. I thought I was too smart. But again, I'm grateful to be here. I appreciate y'all listening, and thanks.
I'll keep this real, real brief. And I prayed before I even decided to say that. But I'm going to say this. What the fellowship has taught me about being service to others and being maximum help to those that we come in contact is just not folks like us sitting in these rooms. We have a lot of opportunities throughout the course of a day to be of service to other people. I watched my sponsor one time. We come out of a restaurant down in North Carolina. He walked over where this truck driver was at, and he was standing over here talking to this trucker, and I saw him hand him something. Come back, and I said, "Man, what was the?" He's always, says, you know, he's out here over the heavy highway. He says, you know, just talk with him a little bit. And he'd given him a little medallion to this guy. He just told him, he said, "Man, carry this bad boy down the heavy highway." He says, "You ain't going to have no problem carrying this." Not even ask him what it was. It made no difference. But I thought, here was an act of kindness. And that old boy looked like he's pretty bedraggled. I mean, being out there on the highway all the time. But he walked away. But I learned, not just from that, but other experiences, little did I know what would happen. But I was taught by another friend in the fellowship when he lost his wife several years ago. And he and I had talked. Well, I lost my bride of almost 47 years exactly 4 months ago today. And what I know from this is I was allowed to be, in the last 3 years of her life, I was allowed to be of maximum service to my bride. That would not have happened had it not been for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, what you people gave me, and you gave it to me for free. All I had to do was show up and do some of the lifting. So I was there on when she drew her last breath. And that, for me, was a gift because I was responsible right to the end. And I would not have been had I kept drinking. That marriage would have ended. And I tell people I'd have married the same gal all over again. I married way above my pay grade. But I learned in here how to treat people with respect, not just with my family or my bride, but other individuals. Even if you're not in a fellowship, showing respect for another one and allow them their integrity no matter where their station in life is. That comes from spiritual principles. And that's what I want to keep trying to practice while I'm here. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
All right, thank you. We will now pass the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA. service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Do we have any AA-related announcements?
Events.
Last weekend, September 23rd, 24th, 25th. Wakefield Camp Fire Conference. Cost of the conference is $60 for the weekend. Today we could have just had a phenomenal ribbon meeting Friday night, a workshop speakers on Saturday and Sunday morning. It's your meal. There's Friday night dinner, breakfast, lunch, and dinner on Saturday, Sunday morning breakfast. If you want to come out, you don't have a tent. Anyways, there's normal seasonal arrangements that can be made at the registration table. Once again, that's the last weekend of September.
Thanks, Matt.
My name's Matthew. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Matthew.
This Sunday at Woodstock Park, New Day Group is having their annual picnic from 10 to 4. It's pet friendly and people friendly. We normally have 150 to 300 people show up. All the food is provided. It's bring your smiles. This Sunday from
10
to
4.
Thanks.
Thanks, Matthew.
All right. And this group, the Simple Actions group, will be having our supper and a speaker next week. Mm-hmm. At 6 p.m., we're going to have a potluck supper.
Supper.
And at 7 p.m., we will have a speaker.
I love it.
John M. From Richmond will be coming down to give us a talk. So please come. And Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. And new folks, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety that would like to introduce yourselves? We can welcome you.
Nick, alcoholic.
Hey, Nick. Hey, welcome.
Melissa, alcoholic.
Hey, Melissa. Hey, Melissa, welcome.
We have literature available over on the table. Pamphlets are available, and books are for sale. Just see me or someone else after the meeting if you want one. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available up here at the table. If you have any questions, please feel free to come up and talk. And just a reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside the church. Stay away, well away from the doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And let's give a final thank you to our panelists. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. At the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, right down the street on Colonial 22nd. Yeah. Can I get someone to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
My name's Stephanie, I'm an alcoholic. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stephanie.
We will close with the Lord's Prayer.
You too?
Yeah.
I was going in front, yeah.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done.